Be advised, the Digital Graveyard contains the following: adult language, bad advice, and spoilers. There will be no further warnings. Consider yourself disclaimed.
Well, the fruits of our labors certainly being enjoyed today. It's Labor Day. And it's the Digital Graveyard. It will not be a Labor Day-themed Digital Graveyard, because I don't even know how we would do that other than just working. I'm one half of the show, Eric Graves, with me as always.
You got Bobby's Digital, and like you said, we are recording here on Labor Day, Monday, September 7th.
Which will probably mean it'll be uploaded by, like, the 14th or something. The way that I've been going. Now that I've moved in, hopefully I'll be able to have a better return on these. But I've been really bad the last two episodes are still not on YouTube right now. But you can still listen to us on Spotify, on Audio Boom, and, not on Google Play yet. I'm still trying to figure out how to get them up on there. But this is a learning process.
I will say getting it on Spotify has been so helpful for me.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh.
Being able to watch it or listen to it.
It's where everybody listens to them. You know, it's weird. YouTube and Spotify have been the two biggest places to listen to, which makes sense, I guess. Nobody really has like Audio Boom as their homepage or anything, I guess. But I don't know. We're learning podcasting. This is a learning process.
I was using Pandora for all my music needs, and I was like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Music and podcast needs. And I'm like, that's fine. It didn't do anything. I've switched to Spotify now just so I can listen to our episodes and everything. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is 100 times better.
Yeah, Spotify is pretty good. I begrudgingly say, as a radio DJ, I begrudgingly say Spotify is a good service. I just wish they paid their, you know, artists more.
Yeah. Anyway. I've been able to listen to all of the Fooly Cooly soundtrack.
There you go, Bobby. What else do you need? We said it before, it is Labor Day weekend, but it is the end of Labor Day weekend. It's Monday right now at the time of this recording. Have you been doing any fun Labor Day activities this weekend?
All this weekend, we have been rearranging our house.
Oh.
Like, it's literally just been like, we're decorating my girlfriend Reba's extra room.
Yeah, the guest room.
She's making it a Disney room.
Yeah, sure, because you guys got lots of Disney stuff.
Right. And then, like, we're rearranging my basement so that, like, you know, I got all my gaming set up down here and my comics finally put away.
Nice. all right. You still got that enormous display case for your comic books?
I don't know what you're talking about.
That big display stand that you got from, like, a Sears when it was going out of business or something.
Oh, I do, but it's in my garage.
Okay. Like, so that's not part of this yet.
I'm getting rid of it.
Like. Okay. It is a mess. It was a display stand or something like that.
Okay, it was a pantyhose like display stand.
That makes it even funnier.
Right. And it was like when we tried to move in here with it, I tried my best to get it down the stairs.
You know who you should I remember. But you know who you should talk to? You should see if not Mind's Eye, the kind of issues needed in Apple Valley. Because they're always getting new stuff.
I've actually spoken to both of them, and both of them are interested. Only one of them is willing to pay me, though.
Oh, okay. Which one? Well, don't say which one. That sounds like we might be throwing shade. But yeah, there's something. You know, you can that thing is perfect for displaying comic books. But, well, this is a weird topic. The listeners don't want to hear about our personal.
No, this is very personal.
Yeah, our personal comic book display furniture. Anyway, I built I put a couch back together this weekend. Nice. Me and my roommate had our first movie night. We watched The Color Out of Space starring Nicolas Cage, which is amazing. This is a horror movie. It's based on an H.P. Lovecraft short story from 100 years ago. It's about a farmer, and a meteorite lands on his property, and the meteorite slowly evaporates, but there's like a creature of energy that it can't be detected by like our visual range. The only evidence that it exists is this color that it leaves behind that is like no other color in the light spectrum. And eventually it just destroys the farmer and his family slowly mutate and go crazy. And the great thing about the movie, which is actually a fascinating bit of like horror movie trivia, is it's Nicolas Cage. It's starring Nicolas Cage. There's also Tommy Chong also has a very a minor background role.
Okay.
But the director is Richard Stanley, whose last film was The Isle of Dr. Moreau, which is one of Marlon Brando's last films. It was famously so terrible that it made him quit directing for 15 years. And this was his first movie that he's made back as a director. And it's
would you say he got better?
Oh, it's perfect. Oh, my God. It's so good. It makes you wonder what The Isle of Dr. Moreau could have been. Like, the dude, like, Nicolas Cage. We all know Nicolas Cage. You know, we yeah. watch his movies for the Cage Rage, right?
Yeah.
the just, oh, excuse me. You know, just like this complete overacting. He just does that in this movie. The director just lets him be Cage, full Cage. And it works so
time.
Well for... The story of a farmer slowly going crazy, right? And Tommy Chong is the same thing. Like he's just doing his whole "Hey man, far out," but it's super unsettling because it's about man, they're the aliens that came down and they're in the water and in the trees now. You know, it's still just Tommy Chong, but because it's a good director, it's a really good movie. So it's another one of my horror recommendations before we get into the meat of the rest of the show. Sure. Colorado Space is fantastic if you haven't seen it yet.
Sure. Well, I mean, other than like the moving around and stuff. So like, Reba hasn't seen a lot of like the movies that we loved as kids.
That checks out. Yeah. That sounds, right. I've hung out with Reba more than a few times. Seems like she'd be one of those people who had a different, it's the same with my roommate too.
And
my landlord.
Like 4 years younger than us. So is a little bit of a generation thing.
Sure. Just a little. Well, it's almost half a decade. I guess that's not nothing.
But for example, we watched the first Pokemon movie together.
Yeah.
Never seen it.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Which did she watch first? Was it like the new remake of the first Pokemon movie on Netflix or was it the original?
Oh, the original. I have the original on Blu-ray, so I was like, we're popping that in.
So she hasn't watched the remake that they did on Netflix yet?
No. And for anyone listening, don't watch that.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't, actually.
It's one of those, like, it's so word for word a copy.
Sure.
And then, like, the visuals just aren't as good. So it's like, why would I bother?
Yeah, it's that weird CGI anime that's.
But also, they
more
cut
popular.
Out the best joke ever.
The Minnesota Vikings one?
Yes, the Minnesota
what?
Vikings joke.
That was so good. It was. Did you know how boring being a child growing up in 90s Minnesota was? And then suddenly the Pokemon movie makes a joke about your sports team? It's great. It was wonderful.
It seriously is. It's like one of those memes you see where it's just like when someone in a movie like mentions your state, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome. Dude, it's great. It's the same reason why I love Golan the Insatiable so much, which I did rewatch this weekend as well because it's wonderful. One of the most underrated Fox animation domination shows, but it was set in Oak Grove, Minnesota, which is a real town here, and I loved it even more for that. But yeah, anyway, we had a few news stories to talk about, but you said it was pretty sparse this week. Do you want to get into one of them, and then we can kind of bounce back between talking about the news and talking about stuff we've been watching or what we've been playing or whatever?
Sure, yeah. This week has been a little lighter than our past few weeks. Just a lot's been going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, this week's been kind of slow. But first things first. So, the character Silk, Marvel character Silk, is in talks of getting a live-action TV series.
Now, Silk, for those who don't know, it's essentially, well, played off as a female Spider-Man. What exactly are her powers? Because I'm not sure I know it entirely.
So, like, her whole background is that she was bit by the same spider that bit Peter Parker.
Okay.
Her name is Cindy Moon.
Cindy Moon, yeah. She's Asian-American, is that correct?
Yeah, Korean-American specifically.
Korean-American,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so she was bit by the same spider that bit Peter Parker. So she has all of his powers. Plus, she has organic webbing.
Okay, so she doesn't have a web
shoots from her fingertips.
Oh, yeah, I knew there was something different about that, too. Okay.
Yeah. One of the kind of better jokes they do in the comics is that, like, because they were bit by the same spider, they have a weird pheromone that they release that makes them both attracted to each other.
Oh, that is like, that's some dramatic comic book writing, actually. There's a lot of interesting stories they could do with something like that.
Right, and it seriously would be like Cindy tried to go on a date and Peter was around.
And she can't focus on her date.
Right.
Peter is on a date with MJ and vice versa, you know? It's humorous, but also quite dramatic. There's a lot of stories you can come up with stuff like that. Like Dakin, Wolverine's evil son, one of his powers is pheromone, and he doesn't tell anybody about it, but that's honestly a more interesting aspect of his character is that element of it, that he can manipulate people with his pheromones, you know? So it's the subtle powers like that I'm always a fan of. Like little you don't think superhero power, but it's something that they can do, and I'm always interested in that. Right. So the B powers, if you will.
Yeah, and it's always played for laughs, like in the comic.
Yeah.
Because it is just like if ever they're left alone, like they start boning.
Oh man.
But yeah,
get it, Tom Holland.
What?
Get it, Tom Holland.
Yeah, for real. But yeah, so, Sony is in talks of producing a show for her. Nice. Which, there hasn't been a live-action Spider-Man type show since the 70s, maybe?
Well, yeah. Certainly it's a predicated move. We have the DC television universe, which is doing much better than the movies are. Well, I don't know, much better. I can't add dollars and cents. But it's very well received, is the Flash and the Arrowverse and all of that. There is going to be a continuation of the Marvel televised series that can get connects to the cinematic universe. We also have the Marvel Netflix universe, which also kind of connected, but now it's sort of up in limbo right now about how much is what. Spider-Man is an interesting example of that because it is still owned by Sony. So is this going to be affiliated with Disney or the Marvel universe in any way?
No, it specifically says it's going to be its own Sony Pictures TV thing. So.
Will it be affiliated with Venom and the Sinister Six movies, and that it's going to be
best it would be related to those.
Okay, but although, we're not sure.
Probably keep it separate, honestly.
Okay, so right now it's not a known quantity right now. We're just speculating about whether this will be connected to the rest of the movies or not.
So far, we do have executive producers Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Okay, I don't know those two.
I've heard the name Phil Lord a lot.
Yeah,
he's probably one of those, like, his career is in producing.
I bet if we looked up his IMDb page, it would be a lot. You know, I'm going to do it right now. I'm gonna look up Chris Lord and – or no, Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Yeah. And the show is being written by Lauren Moon, who's best known for shows like Good Trouble and Atypical.
Oh, I loved Atypical.
Atypical's great, yeah.
It's so good.
So I'm down with that as, like, being the lead writer.
I just pulled up Phil Lord's. He's a young producer. He's only maybe in his 40s too. This is great, dude. He is a film producer. You're correct. You might have recognized his name from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. He produced that.
Okay.
The Lego Movie.
All right.
And Bobby, you're really gonna dig this one. Clone High.
Holy shit.
He was a producer for Clone High. That's 2002. Going way back. So he's been in it a while. But he's done a lot more higher priority, I guess. Or higher profile is the word. Mostly animated movies.
Which isn't bad. That just means, like, but some of the best animated movies ever, really. Into the Spider-Verse, and you said Lego Batman?
He's produced episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's produced episodes of How I Met Your Mother. There's a 22 Jump Street, the sequel to the movie that was a remake of a 90s show. Mostly animation. So Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, he also did the Lego Ninjago movies, Son of Zorn. I don't know if you remember that one.
I remember Son of Zorn.
Yeah. Well, I guess we are the two then, because nobody else watched it. Hoops! That's a show that we talked about briefly, which I have to say I did continue watching, and it turns out I do actually like it a lot. There was another one on here that I was gonna see. Oh, Smallfoot, which is an adorable DreamWorks picture.
I didn't see it.
It's cute. Oh, and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs too. So
okay.
a lot of fairly high profile animation. So is this Silk series gonna be live action?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, wow! So this is a departure for him a little bit, but it's in his wheelhouse. You know, he has been doing a lot of action. A lot of comedies too. So which might be a little bit telling.
Well, and like some of the more recent stuff that you listed there are like, yeah, action superhero stuff.
Yeah,
like even Ninjago, like for what it is a superhero show.
And you said the other one was Christopher Miller was set to produce.
Chris Miller, but yeah.
Okay, well, if it's probably the same guy because he's also produced a lot of stuff in partnership with Phil Lord as well, including Into the Spider-Verse, the Lego movies, and Clone High. So they might be a team, these two.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably just partners and everything.
A lot of these things that we've listed haven't been bad either. They've been pretty decent. So with the one bit of information we have about the Silk series, it's at least somewhat optimistic, I suppose.
One thing to kind of note is that, like, back in 2018, a little bit after Into the Spider-Verse came out,
yeah,
they did announce that they wanted to make a Spider-Women movie.
Oh.
And that Silk was in talks to be one of the Spider-Women.
So this could have possibly stemmed from that conversation. We're talking about maybe the first step in this plan that they're trying to move on, you know? And also, you gotta keep in mind, too, they're also probably working on Into the Spider-Verse 2, which is confirmed, right?
Yeah, that's 100% confirmed.
By the way,
said that new Spider Into the Spider-Verse, while it will introduce more Spider-Man, it's still going to be a Miles Morales story.
Spider-Mans, yeah.
Spider-Mans, yes.
We've established the plural before. It's Spider-Mans.
but yeah, so like they might be done trying to do that whole Spider-Women movie.
Okay, yeah. And this,
or
this
at the very least, they're not going to have Silk be in it. There's
well,
plenty
this
of other
could
Spider-Women.
Just be the logical conclusion of what that idea stemmed, origin, you know, like things go through transformations from idea to finished movie. So if we get a Spider-Women movie, that could be fine. If we get a Silk show, that's fine too. I think we're getting something new, and I think that's the bottom line. And it's from two people who clearly have. I mean, you can't have made a movie like even from a producer standpoint, you can't have made a movie like Into the Spider-Verse, which is, and we've said it before, the best Spider-Man movie. It's so good. I don't care that it's animated. If you are listening and they're like, oh, it's an animated movie, it's for kids, you get that wrong-headed idea out of your head right now. Into the Spider-Verse is a masterpiece. It's so good. You can't, even if you don't know anything about Spider-Man, you must be at least a somewhat good producer to not screw up a movie as good as Into the Spider-Verse. You know what I mean? At the very bare minimum. The fact that it was as good as it is shows to me that they have knowledge of how to make entertaining superhero action films, you know, this process. So yeah, right now I'm going to say my verdict is we can be optimistic about Silk. I have no reason to be and feel bad about it.
And Silk is a cool character and new. She is newer than Miles. She's new. She's not newer than Spider-Gwen.
Underutilized
right
is, I think what you're getting at there, Bobby, is we've talked about this before. You can, there is a school of thought where you can tell a better story with a lesser known superhero because the audience has less expectations about it. You know what I mean? Which is why Miles Morales, I think you'd agree, was so perfect for Into the Spider-Verse because so many people don't know that much about him. It was the first time he'd ever appeared in a movie.
Silk
even more so. Like you said, she's newer than Miles Morales Spider-Man. And I needed you to explain to me her powers. So that kind of gives the writers a free ticket to do whatever they want with it, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes that can work really, really well for a movie or a series. So again, like it's not a bad idea at all from inception. Like going with Silk is a good idea.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Do you want to move on to the next thing, or you want to keep going with this topic. Do you
We can definitely move on to the next topic unless you want to take a break to talk about some more pleasantries like we've been doing. Because I have watched a couple of other things over this weekend. I did a lot of binge watching this weekend.
Well, there is one extra thing that like I didn't talk about before we started.
Oh?
But Nintendo had a 35th anniversary Super Mario Bros.
What, really?
Nintendo Direct.
Oh, man. I didn't even – well, I guess I don't have a Switch, so I don't know. Yeah, well, what is – encompassed in this 35 Mario anniversary?
So pretty much they were like, from now until I think October of next year, they're going to be releasing a bunch of games and merchandise, all celebrating the 35 years of Mario.
Wow. Yes. 35 years. That feels like almost – it's weird to say. It feels like Mario's been around longer, but I know he – even though I know that he hasn't. Like, just because he's such a part of the zeitgeist, not only of American youth, but of just everywhere. He's the most recognizable video game character in the world, you know? It's like...
Oh, yeah. Some people will go as far as to say, like, the only fictional characters bigger than him are, like, Mickey Mouse.
Batman. I mean, that's exactly what I mean. Like, Mario feels like one of them, right? Like, it feels like he should have originated in, like, the 60s or something. It's like, no, it was the mid-80s. It's so weird. But here we are, 35 years later, and now Mario. That's awesome, dude. Have you gotten any of this package yet?
Yeah, so they announced a lot of things right off the bat. The first thing they're going to do is, you remember the Game & Watch?
I do.
So they're releasing a brand new Game & Watch that's going to be loaded with Mario's 1, 2, and the Lost Levels.
Back up, man. A brand new Game & Watch. Like, that's a big deal. I haven't made Game & Watch in so long, dude.
Yeah, it's going to be like gold and all, like, you know, 35th anniversary collector's edition version.
You're telling me.
I want it so bad.
You're telling me it's the golden Game & Watch?
Yes.
That's the most Nintendo sentence you can say. So much. That's great, dude.
Oh,
so you don't have this one yet, or did you already get this one?
This comes out in November.
Okay. So you got your antenna open for it.
Oh yeah, I'm totally getting this.
That's quite a collector's item by the sound of it.
Some of the other things that are coming is a so they're Mario and Luigi RC cars.
Oh, okay. All right.
With cameras mounted to the back of them connect to your Nintendo Switch to play in VR.
What? But they're RC cars, so which implies that they're remote control somehow, right?
Yep, through your Switch.
So you put a VR headset on. And you can see from the perspective of the RC cars? Am I getting that right?
Exactly, yeah. Oh. You can build your own tracks around the house or around a park or whatever. And you can play it as though you're playing regular Mario Kart.
Look at Nintendo trying to make RC cars cool again, dude.
That's really fucking great.
That's great. I never would have thought about that, but... That is absolutely something that the Switch could do, you know? Like, Nintendo can sell tracks for them now. Like, you can sell other Mario Kart RC cars to play on these tracks. Like,
release, like, a Peach and a Toad and all that later on. Like, yeah.
They've made the greatest video game of all time, real-life RC cars. It's, Nintendo, you did it again. Look at you. I don't think this is going to be like a smash hit or anything, but it is. They have done this. This is something that they have decided to do, and it makes sense. And I'm sure they are going to make a decent amount of money off of this concept too. Nintendo, man. It's the greatest family company ever. Nintendo is never going to go bankrupt. I don't care what anybody says. Anybody.
No.
Yeah. If you got anything to say about Nintendo in the comments right now, you're wrong. I'll say it there.
But yeah. So that's being called Mario Kart Live Home Circuit.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Home Circuit is a pretty good name for it. Some of the other things released: Super Mario 99.
Super Mario 99.
Essentially, it's going to be free to play on the Switch, but it's playing like the first Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, okay, but that didn't come out in 1999, did it?
No. So the point of the game is that, like, every time you defeat an enemy or bust a block or anything in that, it's going to affect another player's game that is currently going on. So, like, think of it like Tetris attacks, how, like, you, like, when you interact with the blocks, it would affect your opponent in some way.
Is this, like, massively multiplayer or something?
Yes. That's why it's 99.
So every time you hit a block, it affects one random player's game somewhere in the world?
Yep.
That's going to be chaos.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
The point of the game is to be the last one, like, living.
There's kind of a lot of news about Mario in this segment here. This is a lot of really interesting concepts right now.
Right. And the last two things are all ports coming to the Switch.
Okay, well, that's still cool.
Yeah. Super Mario 3D World, which is the one with the cats.
Oh, okay.
Well, that one's being ported to the Switch with some extra bonus content.
All right.
And the other thing is Super Mario 3D All-Stars Collection.
Yeah, that's enough adjectives, I suppose, for a Mario game.
But it's got Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, and Mario Galaxy.
Oh, so it's a collection of them. Okay, that makes sense because you said a collection. I should have been listening better. That's awesome. All right, so that's all the Mario news.
That is all the Mario.
Want to hear about this thing I started watching on Disney Plus?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Earth to Ned.
Okay.
It's a talk show from the Henson Company about an alien who was supposed to blow up Earth but then fell in love with celebrities, and now he started a talk show. And obviously, since it's from the Henson Company, it's Brian Henson, Lisa Henson's brother, who I guess they're both still the head of the Henson Company, because I did wonder about that before. But yeah, this is so Brian Henson, because he always seemed to be a little more involved in, like, the comedy aspect of it. It's family friendly, obviously. There's no, like, swearing or sex or violence or anything. But this, if this isn't everything I loved about The Muppet Show, it's very intelligent humor. And it is. It's only really two or three or four puppets, you know, because they got a lot of little, like, fraggly goons hanging around. But there's his sidekick and him. And he's like, this is just these two aliens that are on the spaceship, and then just have, it's just a talk show. So it makes a lot of sense, probably because you could probably film this fairly socially distantly. But the first episode, they had Andy Richter on and Gillian Jacobs, and it slowly, like, every episode, it seems to be like there seems to be a world going on outside of the show as well, where people are aware that there's aliens that are invading or something. Because some of the guests are like, oh, yes, no, I am aware. What are the weaknesses of this ship, if you don't mind me asking? And he's like, we'll talk about that later. There was a joke that cracked me up, too, where he was like, would you like to sing a song with me? And he was like, yeah, I'll sing with you forever until the end of the world. And then his sidekick goes like, oh, that could be way sooner than you think. And then he goes, yeah, that could be way sooner than you think. But let's get started. And I just, like, died. So it's really intelligent humor. And it's that classic Muppet charm too. It's delightful, man. If you didn't like that new Muppet show on Disney Plus, I think you should give this a try. Earth to Ned. It's really, all right. I watched the whole thing in like one go. I thought it was stupid funny, man. That's what I want to talk about. That's just one more thing that I watched this weekend. But
and that's the perfect thing to do with the Jim Henson Company, because, like, since Disney bought them, all they did was make two movies, and that's really been it so far.
Yeah, they didn't have anything to do with the Dark Crystal that they made either. That was all Netflix, you know.
Yeah.
And might still be. I don't know. We'll see. But this is the other reason it's perfect is because, like you said, Disney bought them. They have so many, a very wide breadth of guest stars on this show. They have RuPaul. But like I said, Gillian Jacobs
just
and Andy
love
Richter.
RuPaul, man.
Well, I mean, doesn't it make sense a little bit? Like, you going back to the original Muppets, Miss Piggy has always been voiced by a guy. She's supposed to be not necessarily a drag queen, but a masculine woman. You know, it's always been a colorful, fun time. I feel like RuPaul and the Muppets are like on the same wavelength. That sounds weird. But,
well, and maybe like RuPaul is even like a Muppet super fan.
I bet you know what? I bet RuPaul's a fan of everything. That guy's amazing. Anyway,
I mean, I will say so. So I would come home and Reba's watching this, like RuPaul's like haunted drag race type
oh.
of deal.
Oh yeah.
Or whatever it's called.
Yes,
Dragula,
queen.
I think.
Dragula?
Is what it's called.
Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So it's exactly as all of his shows are, where it's like, you know, men in drag doing a show, but it's all like horror themed. Every episode is horror themed.
See, RuPaul's great. That's everything that you're describing is awesome. I wish RuPaul was my gay dad. God. Anyway,
as opposed to
as my normal straight cisgendered white dad. I mean, obviously, just running the mill. Anyway,
no, RuPaul seems like he'd be so much fun to be around.
I love you, Daddy Graves. I shouldn't say that. Anyway, that was mean. I wish RuPaul was my fun uncle. That's what that's where we go. Anyway, so yeah, no, but yeah, check out Earth to Ned. It was pretty fun. They had a lot of guests, and it was actually there were some. It got pretty serious. I think the last episode they talk about how difficult it is to transition from Broadway to Hollywood because of how formulaic the casting process of those two mediums becomes and how it breeds different kinds of actors. And then they make jokes about butts or something. I don't know, but so it was actually pretty good. But yeah, that was one more thing that I had watched. You want to move on to some more newsworthy talkings?
We're about halfway. So,
we're about halfway done with the time right now.
Sure. So we literally just found this out like an hour ago, not even.
Oh, man.
But director Ridley Scott confirms that he is working on a new Alien film.
Oh, man. Well, okay, this is a big deal because Ridley Scott hasn't been that involved with too many of them. I don't know if he was involved in Alien Covenant. I think he was involved in Prometheus. Ridley Scott, for those – the Aliens films, for those who might not know, are a high-concept sci-fi series that combined sci-fi and horror for the first time. And it was very groundbreaking at the time. I think the first one came out in the 70s. Sigourney Weaver starring in it. Ian Holm is in it as well. They had many series. They've crossed over with The Predator. The recurring themes in all of them is that these hive-like, silicon-based aliens called the Xenomorphs that lay these eggs. The eggs open up with these spider-like tentacle monsters that grab onto your face, shove their penis down your throat, and then implant a larval alien into your chest, which then when the facehugger falls off, you're fine for a couple hours, and then the alien bursts out of your chest, killing you. But now it's an alien that grows into a big, large alien that eats your organs with a tiny mouth tongue. It's super, super great. Very, very prolific sci-fi horror series. The aliens were designed by H.R. Giger. That's the Alien series in a nutshell. So let's continue from there. Ridley Scott was the original director of the very first one and creator. He was not involved in any of the other ones for years after that, though. So,
right. Well, it does say that he had involvement in Prometheus and Covenant.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was
but
pretty
he might
sure
not have been
he
the
was.
Director.
I was pretty sure he was involved in Prometheus. I wasn't sure about Covenant because I actually still haven't seen that one, which is my shame to bear. But yeah. So I knew he had been involved, but the bigger significance, Bobby, maybe you want to share because you told me this and I didn't even know this yet. The bigger significance, really.
Yeah. This is going to be the first Alien movie to release since Disney bought it, and that happened with the Fox deal.
I had no idea about that. I did not know that Aliens was in that breadth of purchases that Disney made, which really shows the horror of just how big the conglomerate of Disney has become. But because, okay, there's also questions. I don't think any of the Aliens movies are on Disney Plus. It's not geared toward
that.
Nothing even close to Aliens is on Disney Plus. So what are they going to do with this movie streaming wise is a very good question. But also, what the heck are they going to do with this movie? It's so many questions about it. Like, you know, I heard Covenant was good. I heard Covenant was pretty good. I still have to watch it. Like I said, Prometheus was a little high on its own drama, you know?
Yeah. I've only seen the original three.
Oh yeah,
and
those
like,
are the best
and
ones.
And like Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, those are the best ones. The first Alien versus Predator and the first three Aliens movies. Oh yeah. I liked Resurrection, but a lot of truists really hated that one.
You know what I've heard that like some people are like, I wish the Aliens and the Predator movies did this more often.
Sure, what?
Like you advertise a movie that sounds like it's a good movie on its own, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got something going on, and then all of a sudden, boom, Aliens movie. Like, none of the advertisement ever portrayed it as that. Give it a different title, but then halfway through the movie, it's just like, nope, it was an Aliens movie the whole time.
It just ends up being, oh, it was the Aliens at the end. That's, you know, okay, it's weird that you bring that up, because that is exactly, stop me if I'm off base or wrong about this. That's exactly what I wanted Pacific Rim to be, except Godzilla. Like, just sure. just like the last monster in Pacific Rim turned out to be Godzilla. And then it's like, okay, Pacific Rim, it's a prequel to Godzilla. Like, that's all I wanted that movie to be. I still like Pacific Rim. Still haven't seen the second one. I heard it wasn't as good. And I honestly like the Godzilla remakes that they've made, too. The first one's okay. The second one's a little bit better.
I still have King of Monsters, like, shrink-wrapped from last Black Friday.
Really? You bought King of Monsters?
Hell yeah.
Oh, that's good, Bobby. I didn't know that you were a Godzilla fan.
I'm not.
We've been friends for years.
Not specifically, but I was like, it's Black Friday and it costs $6.
Ooh, jealous, because I watched that movie on a plane and I loved it. I mean, same problem as the first remake. Nobody really cares about these people and their problems. We just want to see the monsters fighting. But guess what? There was a lot more of in King of the Monsters. Monsters.
More
fighting.
Monsters.
It was great.
Definitely more monsters.
It was awesome. That's all anybody wants to see in a Godzilla movie. And I am a true, like, a Godzilla purist, diehard fan, you know? So, in regards to that, for like guerrilla marketing for an Aliens movie, that'd be awesome. Or you know what? Even better, like Love Actually, but the end credits, it's Aliens. Like, Love Actually 2 is actually going to be an Aliens crossover. They did make a Love Actually 2, and then some other movie. I don't know what cheesy movies are coming out these days, but or like Trolls World Tour. Oh, which I also watched this weekend, by the way. Trolls World Tour.
Oh, and how'd you feel about it?
It's pretty okay. It's pretty.
Yeah, it was kind of cute.
It's pretty okay. I thought it was better. Maybe it was because I was incredibly inebriated. I thought it was a little bit better than the first one.
And the fact that you're 29.
And the fact that I am a very much an adult man. So maybe not intended for me. But I will say I loved the animation. DreamWorks really knows what they're doing. And it was interesting to me, more so than the actual movie. This is my weird psychosis. But... something that I found even more interesting than the actual movie itself was that this was the first, it was like the 20 years of DreamWorks or something like that. Like maybe it was 15, I'm not sure, but they had like one of those special title cards for like the anniversary with a bunch of their other movies that they've done in the past. And I was like, oh damn, like you don't really think about that, because for all of our childhoods, DreamWorks has always been like the rival to Disney. That's not that new. That was what, like 2000? 99?
The first movie?
Yeah, when DreamWorks first did their first movie.
Yeah, it would be like 99 or so, because everyone says it's Shrek, but it's not. First movie was like Prince of Egypt or something.
Yeah, Prince of Egypt. I know they did like El Dorado too. Or was that Warner Brothers? I don't know.
No, that's them. They also did them? El Dorado.
Okay, yeah, El Dorado. I know it wasn't the Iron Giant. The Iron Giant was Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I want to say it's either Prince of Egypt or there was another one that was like that.
There was Stallion of the Cimarra.
Yeah, that is also them. Spirit.
Yeah, Spirit. DreamWorks has been around for a good while. Like I said, it's their anniversary. But compared to Disney, it's they're like a fraction of how long they're Microsoft compared to Nintendo to translate it into console terms, you know. But anyway, yeah. So those were my thoughts on Trolls 2. Maybe not the thing that was intended to be taken away from that movie, but I thought that was interesting. Anyway, yeah.
Like I saw that movie too, and my one complaint was that like you didn't show off enough of the other genres. I feel.
You know, I felt that too. Even the rock trolls is like, oh, the three rock songs that every white high school dance has on, you know, like it's
yeah.
It was like Crazy Train, Scorpions, and one more. I can't even remember it. But Yeah, I don't know, man. It was interesting. And then that one really sad country song, which even I don't even know country. That's not indicative of the rest of the country music genre.
No.
It seems off to me. Although they did have Daft Punk in the beginning for the techno trolls, and that was awesome. Daft Punk.
Yeah, but it wasn't Daft Punk singing.
No, that's, I mean, of course not.
Daft Punk doesn't sing.
It was, but, yeah, it was none of the actual people singing.
because it was Carrie Underwood who was that country horse.
Oh, that's right, that's true. Ozzy Osbourne didn't sing Crazy Train, though, even though he was in it.
Yeah, Ozzy Osbourne was in it.
It's so weird. It's so weird. Anyway.
That guy even sing anymore, though?
I don't know, actually. He hasn't gone on tour.
Because I know he's stupid sick.
He canceled the last, like, 2 years of touring. I know this because I'm a rock radio DJ in my non-podcast life. When the glamour of podcasting is done, I have to go back to the radio. But
the glamour of local celebrity radio.
Yeah. Anyway, for the last 2 years, Ozzy's had to cancel his North American tours. He's not doing great, man. He says he wants to do a couple of like single performances still, though. But his world touring days are over. He's a very old man. we were talking about trolls too. We got in a weird tangent where we were very concerned about Ozzy Osbourne.
We were talking about aliens, man.
We were talking about aliens, and then and before that, we were also talking about aliens, but it was Muppets, man. This is like a typical conversation for me. For Digital and Graves, this is how we talk when we're not in a podcast, but I guess it's also how we talk when we're doing a podcast, too. You have more news, though, that you wanted to bring up, though.
Yep, really just one more big thing.
Okay.
So Netflix has been doing really good with this whole, like, video games turned into TV shows thing. So our next thing is a live-action Resident Evil show.
Oh.
It's just being called Raccoon City.
Okay.
So from the looks of it, we're not getting any of like the big characters from the series, like Chris Redfield or
Jill Valentine
or Leon Kennedy.
Leon, yeah.
They're doing the thing that The Witcher did.
Claire Redfield. That was another one.
Yep.
And those are the people from Resident Evil. Go on, Bobby.
Yeah. So they're doing the thing that The Witcher did where we got two timelines going on and they'll kind of intersect at a certain point.
Okay. Well, the interesting thing about The Witcher, though, The Witcher adaptation that Netflix made wasn't inspired by the games, I don't think, so much as it was by the books that inspired those games.
A lot of people forget that The Witcher is a book series first.
Yeah, because it was
video
like
game second.
It was like a very popular Eastern European fantasy novel series. I don't think it was that. I could be wrong. I don't think it was that popular in the United States until the games came out, though.
I've never heard of it before that.
Me neither. Like I didn't. I mean, it was like Witcher 3 until I realized that they were even inspired by novels. To my knowledge, Bobby. To my knowledge,
I didn't even know there was a Witcher series until Witcher 3.
Oh, like so. To my knowledge, Bobby, Resident Evil is not inspired by any such novels or comic books or anything like that. It's just been a video game series. So it is a little bit of a difference between those two things. And not necessarily what translates for The Witcher, because to my knowledge, that's how the first book is like set up, too, with sort of a time skip, you know?
Sure.
Never happened in Resident Evil. They've never done that, to my knowledge, either.
But, like, Resident Evil isn't new to, like, when they do a new property to invent completely new characters. It's not like they're like, we have to use Jill every time.
That's true.
You know? So, like, that's not, like, a new thing to them. But
yes, I turn your attention to the Resident Evil movies that had very little to do with anything.
Weren't there, like, eight? Like, there were way more than there needed to be.
I don't want to say that there are eight, but I can't correct you because I don't know. it's definitely more than five, man.
Yeah, they did, like, one, two, three, and then they just started being, like, Apocalypse and
yeah, they did
whatever.
One. No, here's the thing: they did one, and it was like 1999, and I know that because Slipknot was on the soundtrack for it. No, it couldn't have been 99; it must have been 2001 because it was Slipknot's second album. It was because that was back in the day in the early 2000s when horror movies had heavy metal soundtracks, unquestionably all of them. It's a weird thing; you can look it up. But so they did one, And then it was a couple years after that when they finally did two, because I remember I was in like middle school when the second one came out. The third one came out, again, a couple of years after that. I want to say I was in high school, but that's not that much time. And then all of a sudden it was like summer, summer, summer. Every year they were putting out another Resident Evil movie, man. Like they were just one after the other. They were going with them. So they
I only remember seeing maybe two, and it probably wasn't even one and two.
I feel like I've seen the third one. I think the third one's the first one where it's like the apocalypse. And that was the first one that I was like, okay, so they're just not doing the video games at all anymore. I think I made it that far. I don't think I've seen any other ones. I think I've seen parts of the fourth one. The fourth one, they're back in a city for some reason, because I know that what's his face, the one that's in Marvel vs. Capcom. What the hell's his name?
Nemesis?
No, Nemesis T-Bone? is in the second one. I'm talking about the suit guy with sunglasses.
Oh, Wesker? Albert?
Yeah.
Wesker.
Yeah, because everybody fucking loves him. So he cameoed in the fourth one, I know. But I didn't watch
this. Speaking of Wesker.
Yeah.
So here's the plots that's going on in this new show.
Oh, we already have a plot synopsis. Cool.
Yep. In the first timeline, 14-year-old sisters Jade and Billy Wesker are moved to New Raccoon City, a manufactured corporate town forced on them right as adolescence is in full swing.
Wait, so it's New Raccoon City. And what? Adolescence? What the hell? Keep going. I'll try not to be as upset going forward. Sorry, I'm sorry. I apologize to the internet.
Yeah. But the more time they spend there, the more they come to realize that the town is more than it seems, and their father may be concealing dark secrets.
Bobby,
secrets that can destroy the world.
Bobby, I feel like what you're describing could be anything.
Could be Stranger Things.
Could be anything, dude. There was a French supernatural thriller that I was watching called Quran. That is literally exactly the same synopsis that you're describing, and that's on Netflix right now, dude. Yeah, that's anything. You could be just describing Sabrina, the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Well, that's just the first timeline. They have the second timeline listed here, too.
Okay. I promised I wouldn't get upset, and I guess I lied. I thought you were finished. But go on with the second timeline. Maybe it'll save everything.
Cut to the second timeline. Well over a decade into the future, there are less than 15 million people left on the planet, and more than 6 billion monsters. People and animals are infected with the T-virus. Jade, now 30... struggles to survive in this new world, while the secrets from her past about her sister, her father, and herself continue to haunt her.
Okay, so not directly inspired by Resident Evil, no. certainly not. Again, I gotta say, what you just laid out is not a very original. Still, okay, the fact that there's two of them might be cool. They might be able to tell some cool story narrative things with that. But they also have Daybreak. That's another. It's like, oh, in the future, there's less than this many people left. They have Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beast, which is a charming animated cartoon as well. But that's the same thing. Like, kids in peril in the future, you know? And oh, she's 30 now. Cool. But it's still like, what? Those individual parts do not seem wholly original to me. And they don't seem wholly affiliated with Resident Evil in any meaningful way, any substantial way. So,
except that their last name is Wesker. So their dad is probably
and
Albert.
It's Raccoon City, but still, maybe their dad is Wesker. I do know that, like, he's from like a very like wealthy family in the Resident Evil universe. I think I could be getting that wrong. I'm sure some fan is already correcting me. But
yeah, my knowledge of the Resident Evil franchise extends to like 1 and 2, 4, and that's really it.
I played a lot of them. The only one that I own was the remake of the first one, and I didn't realize how difficult that game was until I started replaying it again. Because the height of Resident Evil's popularity, which is, you know, the early 90s, the days of PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2, I'm gonna make that claim. I mean, they've had fine games since then, but they've had a lot of very not fine games as well. Yeah, I'm gonna say Nemesis and 3 are probably the biggest. and four. People liked four too. But four anyway.
Is like the big one that like people love.
Yeah, because that was the one with Leon and on that island, right?
Right, and like it's not as slow as like the ones beforehand.
Yeah,
but it's not as like stupid gun happy as the ones that come afterwards.
Yeah, it's still a Resident Evil game. Not so much because there was like conserving ammunition was a big thing in the first ones, and when they started moving away from that, people really really did not have a good time with Resident Evil. But yeah, I remember. I mean, that was to call Resident Evil 4 AAA is not. I mean, it was a smash hit when it came out, dude. Like, I remember X-Play had, like, a whole episode dedicated to that.
Well, and, so, like, the funny thing about Resident Evil 4, right?
Yeah.
So, when the GameCube came out, they made a deal with Capcom to be like, okay, Capcom, you're gonna make, I think, 5 games exclusive to our system.
Alright.
And Resident Evil 4 was one of them. They did that, and then right away, Capcom was like, we can't just have this be exclusive.
You can't do it. That would just be, yeah, yeah.
We made too good of a product here, so.
So what you're saying, Bobby, is Resident Evil is the first AAA game that just started the trend of platform, like, you know, a Unity. Whereas this, where if you release a AAA game, you can't do it exclusively. You have to release it on all platforms. Because back in the days of PlayStation 2 and GameCube, exclusivity was a big deal. And we have brought this up on the show as well before. You don't see that so much. That was the thing about the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. Like, every game was going to be available on both if it was a AAA game. You know, it was the smaller titles that were exclusive, and that was it.
I mean, unless it were, like, you know, made in-house by that company, like Mario's or Zelda's.
Not Mario, Halo, obviously. That's interesting. We might as well not have brought it up, because clearly it doesn't have anything to do with this Netflix series that's coming up.
No, but we're talking about Resident Evil.
That's
man.
True. Like, we're talking about Resident Evil, but I mean, we could be talking about anything. This Resident Evil, this Raccoon City. They can't even call it Resident Evil. You know, it just takes place in a town in the Resident Evil world.
Can you call the movies Resident Evil? I guess they can.
I think the first two you can. I really do. You know, even the first one was not a true telling. I don't think Alice is a character in Resident Evil. Even though that's...
I can't quote you on that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But you did have you know, a SWAT team inside a mansion. There's a secret laboratory underneath it. Like that, yeah, that happens in Resident Evil. Totally. They had zombies and monsters that looked like the zombies and monsters in the Resident Evil games. That's true. The second one was, I will say, I mean, not the best one. It wasn't that great, especially hasn't aged very well, but it's a product of its time. The second one was far and away the most accurate, because they clearly wanted to make that feel like a video game to muddied effect. But Nemesis is in that one. There's a lot of liquors in that one, too. There's the team men, you know, the big dudes, and a city full of zombies, which is very true to Resident Evil 2 and 3, I think, which is the one that I played the least. But yeah, you know what I mean? And then the movies just kind of went off the rails. But again, I can't say for sure, because I've only watched up to like 3, and I think 4 is kind of accurate. I don't know. But so I don't know. I guess we can't get upset that Netflix is going in a completely insane direction with Resident Evil, because that's Resident Evil, baby. Like, the games went completely insane, too.
The games will flip-flop between, like, yeah, your SWAT team invading a mansion or even protecting a city.
Yeah.
Or
invading a country in Africa.
Or in the newer ones, like, you just go into a house that's, like, magic.
That's insane.
There's some weird bullshit.
I have no idea. Or Resident Evil Village, which actually looks stupid good. But who knows what that's about? It looks like The Evil Within, which The Evil Within was supposed to be like a remake of Resident Evil 2, because it was the same guy for Bethesda. So yeah, like I guess the takeaway from all of this is Resident Evil is just a feeling inside our hearts. It can be anything. You know, as long as it's got zombies. That's the one thing. It's a movie with zombies, you might as well call it Resident Evil.
My one thing, though, is if they do bring some of the characters from the games.
Sure.
Like, specifically Chris Redfield, if they bring him in the games, he's got to punch a rock. Like, do you know that whole bit?
No. What is this?
In Resident Evil 5, like, they have QuickTime events, right?
So, yeah, okay.
So there's a point where he's, like being Indiana Jones by, like, a boulder. And he just, like, stops it with his fist and then just, like, punches it over and over again. It's
okay.
Like, it's a fucking rock, dude.
Wasn't Resident Evil 5, famously the one that everybody hated?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that starts starting to make a little more sense now. Cool.
I think 6 is the one people hate more.
I know that they had a big drought where they were just not good. People were not having Resident Evil games.
People weren't happy with Resident Evil till 7 came out.
That's the last one that came out, right?
Yeah.
Because Village is 8.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I do remember 7. Like a mutual friend of ours, Andrew, who used to work with me when I worked at a Jiffy Lube, he was nuts so obsessed with Resident Evil 7. Because he's not a hardcore gamer, but he was a gamer of our age, and casual gamers of our age flock to one or two titles. Resident Evil was one of his, and he was just, he couldn't believe how good it was. Like, he would not shut up about it. So dude, if you're listening, Andrew, I'll play it eventually, probably.
That game scared the crap out of me.
That's what he said.
I played it in VR.
Oh no, Bobby, why would you do that?
Like, I went to a friend's house and he was like, I have it on VR. I put it on and like, it's just a scene where I have to crawl under the house.
Ugh.
And then one of them is like at my feet, like, chasing me. And I'm like, I hate every second of this.
Too spooky for me, Bobby. Too spooky for me. Oh my God. Like, three spooky, oh five me, what you're describing right there, man. Because I remember watching the trailers, I did feel like it's like, oh, this gives me the vibe of The Evil Within. And The Evil Within, I think, was a wake-up call to Resident Evil. Who makes Resident Evil? Was it Capcom? Yeah. It must be a wake-up call to Capcom, because clearly enough people were dissatisfied by the games they were making that one of their developers going over to Bethesda making The Evil Within drew, because The Evil Within has never had bad reviews. Both games did fairly well. I feel like that must have been a wake-up call to them. And I think Village is another response to that. When I say, like, Village very much looks like The Evil Within, is like, yeah, well, Resident Evil 7 kind of did too, but The Evil Within is supposed to look like those first Resident Evil games, except set in, like, a creepy, like, Spanish Victorian village somewhere.
Well, right now, in general, Capcom is going through, like, its own little renaissance, because there was just a period where they did everything wrong.
And I thought of this when you first mentioned Netflix video game adaptations. I'm sorry, I forgot about it, so it took me this long to bring it up again. But you mentioned Netflix doing video game adaptations, and you mentioned Resident Evil and The Witcher. Well, Resident Evil is from Capcom. Another video game adaptation that we have mentioned a few times on the show so far is Dragon's Dogma, which is also Capcom. Do you think, I mean, obviously it's just at this time, we're just conjecturing right now. This is completely not going off of anything except two titles. But do you think Capcom Netflix deal might be something on the horizon?
I mean,
you look into that microphone right now and you tell me that point blank, that you don't want to see Netflix adapting Street Fighter again.
Oh my God, that'd be great. That would actually be great.
We're overdue for another Street Fighter movie. You know it as well as I do, America. Netflix.
But like I was saying, right now Capcom is going through like its own like little renaissance with all of its games. Like, because there was a time we didn't get a new Mega Man game for over 11 years.
Sure.
And then they gave us Mega Man 11.
Yeah.
Which is great. They gave us that shitty DMC game, and then they were like, here's Devil May Cry 5. Forget DMC.
That's right. That was a shitty Devil May Cry game.
Yeah.
And I still haven't played the new one, but I heard it was great.
Yep. And then, Resident Evil 7 was great. they completely fixed Street Fighter V, and they're making a new one now.
And Monster Hunter World, which has been, like, their most successful title that they've released in, like, years, too. You know, and their first MMORPG game. Well, it's not so much an RPG, but because the Monster Hunter games were, for the longest time, their biggest international sellers, you know? Yeah. And there's a Monster Hunter movie coming out. Oh, yep. Man.
And a Mega Man movie.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I thought you would have wanted to talk about that first.
Yeah, but that happened like weeks ago.
Oh,
They talked about that. Nothing new's come out.
But you can't say, okay, like, so if we're running out of time, but I think this is a really good way to end the episode. Let's say if Capcom does have a Netflix deal or any kind of like deal with Sony, DreamWorks, what have you, you know, just any kind of like movie studio adaptation deal, what would you most like to see coming to Netflix or Hulu or even Amazon Prime or what have you? Like what Capcom titles would you most like to see adapted into a film?
Okami.
Ooh, Bobby.
Yeah, or like, Beautiful Joe.
Like an animated movie or an anime series or what?
Okami should be a movie.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Like, I would get like Laika to work on that.
Dude, are you saying a stop motion animated Okami movie?
Wouldn't it be beautiful?
From Laika Studios, my favorite thing that exists in the world?
Yes.
For those who don't know, Laika Studios did Coraline, they did Paranorman, they did Missing Link, the Box Trolls, Kubo and the Two Strings, and I think that's all their movies that they've done, but they're great. Dude, now that you've said it, I just got the weirdest boner. I'm for it. I'm here for that. Beautiful Joe, Netflix anime series, perfect. Even with that CGI anime that they've been doing, that would be fine. You know what I mean? Because that was how the games were.
Well, what about you, man? Like,
I want a Street Fighter movie.
Favorite things that don't get enough love from Capcom.
Well, I want a Street Fighter movie. I'll say it, but I'll tell you this though, Bobby. Even more so than I want a Street Fighter movie, if it had to be one or the other, I would want a Darkstalkers movie.
Ooh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I don't know if you've watched Netflix.
You just want to see a live action sexy Morgan, right?
And Felicia, yeah. Those are the two. But because there's never really been a story with Darkstalkers. Just like any fighting game, they don't really have stories. They just have events that happen in between the games, and you have to buy the next game to find out. But Darkstalkers has never given a shit about any of that, really. Like, their characters have just ridiculous, like, oh, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. Like, I've never been able to follow it, so I don't care. You can do anything you want with the Darkstalkers characters. I'm not going to mind. But when you look at, like, I don't know if you've watched, because Netflix today, did a recent adaptation of Doom, which was actually okay. Not great, but it was pretty good. It was better than that the one that from the 2000s they did. Way better.
I remember seeing that movie and not putting two and two together that it was like based off of the video game.
Oh, really?
And just when that scene came where it went into first person view,
oh,
I was like,
God.
Oh, this is a video game.
I remember going to see that movie thinking it was going to be scary, like the games, and just being so disappointed by all of it, dude. It was not even a, even by 2000s action movie standards, not a scary film. The one that Netflix just made was pretty okay. I don't want to call it a good movie, but it was okay, dude. Like, it was truer to the Doom games than the Rock version was, I thought, even though the basic story of all of them has been the same. A portal to Mars that goes through hell. But if it was something like in that same vein, like, you know, it's a video game movie. It's okay if it's cheesy. Doesn't have to be scary. Doesn't have to be too well, high production value. I wouldn't mind, honestly. Like, if you wanted to make a Darkstalkers movie in the vein of like the Underworld films, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Where it's like, oh, Morgan's a vampire and she's got a... Well, she's a succubus in real life, sorry. But it was like, oh, or Jay Talbane, who I would... the werewolf, you know? Yeah. Who's clearly a very well-to-do gentleman. He's wearing a suit before he turns into a werewolf every fight. So he must have just lots of suits just lying around. What if it's like a detective series starring Jay Talbane and Felicia, because I know that they're like they're connected, their backstories and
are their backstories connected?
Yeah,
they
I
only are. Know like two of their backstories.
I don't know. I think they're part of like the same group. I'm not sure what all that entails. I know Morgan's the main character that everyone knows. She's like Irish, and she's from like a very wealthy family or something like that.
Felicia's like a nun who wants to be a pop star.
Yeah, is that her story? Weird. Anyway, there's so many, and you can just have these weird monsters. I feel like Netflix can have a really fun time with it. Maybe it won't be good. Maybe it won't be. But you know what? That's secondary. But we are getting really, really a little bit over time. We're still within this. But that's what I'd say. I would say Darkstalkers, I think, is something that I'd like to see on Netflix. In what form, animated or live action or whatever, doesn't really matter. So I'll say live action.
I think
live
it would
action.
Work best in animated, though, just because like some of those characters get weird.
Well, so traditionally, so has Street Fighter. The animated Street Fighter movies are way better than the live action ones. But the live action ones are a delight for what they are. That's my point. So if
it's
you
so
want,
bad, though.
Yeah, if, well, like they're
did you see the Chun-Li?
What?
Did
oh,
you
the
see
Chun-Li
the,
movie?
Legend
no.
of Chun-Li.
No, I didn't. I forgot that existed.
That one's so
I was
bad.
Talking about
it
like
had
the...
it had the one dude that no one remembers from Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, that guy?
Taboo. Yeah,
I don't know their
taboo.
Names. Anyway.
Yeah, he was Vega.
But you know what I mean? Like, okay, I was talking about the Raul Julia Street Fighters. You
oh,
know?
Yeah, no, that.
The Van Damme Raul Julia ones.
That movie's those great.
Are, well, they're not. They're very, very bad. But we all love how bad they are because they're supposed to be, like, a cheesy 80s action film starring a bunch of, like, AAA blockbuster people. I'd be totally cool with that because, like... I feel like the Underworld movies and the Resident Evil movies are part of a trope that was very, very popular at a certain time. If you make a Darkstalkers movie in modern day trying to emulate that sort of those supernatural thriller action movies from the early 2000s, I think you got a winning combination there. But we are getting over time, Bobby. We got to start wrapping things up here.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, I really got nothing new to add. They've come out with a plot synopsis, and that's really about it. For
all
the
right.
Resident Evil show.
Well, okay. Well, we're going to have to end it here. We're going to have to do some shout-outs. You remember, you can follow us on Facebook at The Digital Graveyard. You can follow us on Twitter at @digital_graveyard. I always have to say, because it's so different, I always have to think about it for a second. Eric Castellanos Art for our logo. Thanks to that guy. He's also the Dapper Skull on Etsy. You can find out. And Bobby, he actually did a mock-up of Digital Graveyard t-shirts that we can go over. Yeah, I know. He didn't have to do that. He just did that. So big thanks to Eric Castellanos. Super cool dude. We can look over. Stay tuned for Digital Graveyard t-shirts. We'll see. And thanks to Sam Dunn and John Wheeler for the use of our theme song. As always, tell your friends. Watch us on Facebook. Watch us on YouTube. Like and subscribe. And if you want to share this with your friends on Facebook, go ahead, or even like make some clips from the audio. You absolutely feel free to do that. Word of mouth is such a huge deal for podcasts. We love you. Remember, anything you want to say, Bobby?
We are still working on that outro.
All right. We'll catch you next time.